Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening. This is Ron Edwards. This is the Don and Ron program. Mr. Allen will not be with us this evening. Coming to you from the frigid upper Midwest of the Twin Cities of Minneapolis and St. Paul. I tell you, folks, it feels like we're up in the top end of Alaska. Wind chills. Temperatures only about one below, two below zero, but the wind and the central wind chill right now here in the Twin Cities of Minneapolis and St. Paul, 20 below zero. Up in Duluth, it is now 40 below zero wind chill, if you will. And in the western part, the northwestern part of the state, Thief River Falls, Bemidji, Fargo, Moorhead, places like that, right around 29, 30, 35 below zero wind chill, if you will. It has been a monster for the last couple of days. It will be continuing tomorrow. Temperatures will rise to a high of two above zero on Friday. And the temperatures on Monday, Tuesday of next week will be even up to around, 28, 29 degrees. I tell you, it makes you wonder what's really happening to this good old planet of ours. But President-elect Donald Trump and his minions and et cetera indicate that there is no climate problem in America or on the face of the planet. And it's just all somebody, primarily Al Gore, just kind of made up everything is okay. Okay. Keep on believing that, if you will. Well, a lot going on. And in fact, tonight we're going to take a real look at the controversy coming out of the University of Minnesota surrounding firing yesterday of Tracy Claes, the University of Minnesota's coach for about a season and a quarter. He took over for Jerry Kill, Coach Kill, who was putting the program back in order, retired in October of 2015 for reasons of health, though he is made a comeback and has just, in fact, today started as the new offensive coordinator at Rutgers, which, of course, is also in the Big Ten. But it is Tracy Clay. It is what has happened in that situation. And the misrepresentations, the lying, if you will, all driven by racism. Everybody wants to stay away from the big elephant in the room, if you will. It all started early September, right after Minnesota, University of Minnesota's first game, when an incident, according to a number of investigative reports, some around the country are saying that the matter was not investigated, etc. You can tell that they aren't clear about the intensity of the investigation, and so much of that was driven by race. And so during that evening, a young Caucasian woman who happens to also be a cheerleader for the University of Minnesota, that kind of explained in early October, actually late September, early October, when she and her attorneys went into court and actually were given a restraining order against, initially it was four young African-American ball players on the University of Minnesota football team, and then it grew to 10. An additional six were picked up some way or another. After that, we started following, we the public on the outside, started following the events. An attorney was hired, a very competent black attorney by the name of Hutton. Mr. Hutton, who had handled a couple of high-profile cases, came in, began to do what needed to be done to protect the constitutional rights of these young African-Americans. Once the number grew to 10, we began a process up here in the good old North, if you will, of making sure at least 12 or 14 or 15 times a day on all of the major stations, television stations, to show the picture of all the pictures of all 10 young African Americans. So, you know, you had, you know, no way of not understanding that they were all blacks if you will. We've never seen any pictures of the cheerleader, though a number of people took pictures of her at the Holiday Bowl game in San Diego a week ago, just a little over a week ago. I don't think that the university realized how many African Americans knew who the victim was. By the way, there were a couple of other Caucasian ladies who were partying with the brothers, including a 17-year-old African-American recruit, if you will, who had come here to look at the campus and et cetera. There was no concern about the fact that the young lady in question had a sexual contact and sexual intercourse with this 17-year-old, which is against the law here in the state of Minnesota, and that she is over the consenting age, 21. Much initially centered around if it were consensual, if the young Caucasian woman had consensually allowed herself to have sex with, and the numbers also varied. You know, it started out 3, and it became 6, and then about a month later, she maintained as many as 15 had sexually assaulted her, and et cetera. What happened, though, that kind of got the extreme right upset and misstepping was that they initially did not realize that there was a video, a 92-second video of 92 seconds of action, if you will, oral sex, things like that, in which the young lady did not seem in any way be impeded, if you will, did not seem to be anything but consensual in her actions and et cetera. In fact, at one point, just prior to her relationship and sexual contact with the first African-American, she actually went into the bathroom of his apartment, and we first reported this 2 Wednesdays ago to kind of test the turf, if you will. She went in and removed her Tampax, if you will, and that she was in the menstrual period, and then proceeded to have sex with however many were involved, while, of course, you know, involved in her menstrual cycle, if you will. That has never been analyzed by the university to the extent that it should be. But in the process, you know, law and order was at work. The Minneapolis Police Department, which handles sexual assaults pertaining to the University of Minnesota, though the University of Minnesota is what is called a land-grant college, has its own police department, if you will, about 44 officers, if you will, do not handle those kinds of investigations, don't have personnel power, and et cetera. Anyways, investigators from the Minneapolis Police Department's Sex Crimes Unit investigated the allegations and made a startling determination. And that determination was that there was not enough evidence, enough prima facie, if you will, to charge these. And as we said, by this time it had grown from 3 to 4 to 5 to 10, if you will, that none of the young men were involved at a level or a legal threshold, an important word too, legal threshold, to be charged, if you will. The case was sent over to the Hennepin County attorney, a man by the name of Mike Freeman, who, of course, is legendary with his toughness on crime, and particularly crime involving African Americans, and God knows, crime involving African Americans in a criminal action against a Caucasian person. In fact, we have a situation here right now that has been festering since the early summer, when a black gunman firing into the car of another individual shoots and kills a young child, African American male child, last name Jones, if you will, and wounds his baby sister. And everyone assumed once the apprehension took place after the individual was apprehended coming back from his initial hiding place, which was in the southern part of the United States, in fact, in Miami. The individual in question was released. He was not charged by the county attorney, though he had admitted in an electronic intercept, a telephone call, that he had fired the shot that had killed the two-year-old child and had really, had wounded, had slightly wounded. When I say slightly, the little baby girl, 18 months old, received a wound through the fleshy part of her leg. How well did I know the situation? I was in the emergency room. I was called as a part of my role as a federal monitor with the Department of Justice as a part of a agreement that the MPD had and still actually has with the Department of Justice to deal with reform in the Minneapolis Police Department. And so, unfortunately, I was present that day in the emergency room of the hospital. In fact, was there as the physicians pronounced the young child deceased, if you will, that the child's life had terminated. And so, with the toughness of this prosecutor, Mike Freeman, when he made the decision after revealing the Minneapolis Police Department's investigative report, he indicated that there was no prima facie, there was no evidence that met the threshold, and consequently declined to charge these 10 young African Americans. The university's president, its athletic director, who had been here 6 months, in fact, he had come here from my alma mater, the University of Syracuse, had began to talk in terms of taking an action under pressure from feminist groups and the gay and lesbian community and et cetera, had taken the position that these Negroes needed to be made an example of, and quickly. Now, again, the Minneapolis Police Department, a professional investigative entity with detectives who were trained in investigating and et cetera, had conducted their investigation. They had given their report with recommendation to the county attorney. The county attorney and the prosecutors and experts had reviewed it and concurred, if you will. But to the surprise of many, the young lady, though, had gone into court and with her, the assistance of her attorneys and also the attorneys for the university themselves, though they were hiding their hands in helping to put together the motion for a restraining order, a trespass order, against all 10 African-American football players on the University of Minnesota team, if you will. People couldn't quite figure it out why it was that this young lady had standing, what is called legal standing, to indicate that these young African-American 10 players who had not received due process, if you will, and were really not subject to an examination by the University of Minnesota under its protocol because the Office of Affirmative Action and Equal Opportunity, which is under the supervision of an African-American female, if you will, we'll come back to that in a minute. We're kind of shocked and surprised, and they were taken back into court. And ultimately, an appeal was made, and both parties agreed that they would basically voluntarily stay separate from each other. But also, there was a peculiar piece there that said that they would not sue because Mr. Hutton, the African-American University of Minnesota football players, had indicated that he intended to file an action in the federal courts because of the constitutionality of what had and what was happening to the young men. So that seemed to be a delay tactic. Given the Office of Affirmative Action for the University of Minnesota, which does not believe in due process, and under Title IX of the Federal Act, if you will, can do all kinds of things which violate all aspects of due process. What then happened was that the announcement was made that as the season wore on, that the 10 African Americans, by the way, as we said, we were seeing their pictures 8, 9 times, 10 times a day, if you will, though the question of race, other than this commentator, who also has a column with the oldest black newspaper in the state of Minnesota, the Minnesota Spokesman Recorder, had begun to raise questions in my column and on this program and on my television program about due process and at what point was there going to be a interest, if you will, to say the least, in what was happening to these young African Americans. Now, at that particular point, one of the young men, who, by the way, the record clearly shows was not present during the time that the alleged sexual assault took place, Anton Winfield Jr., whose father is a retired veteran NFL football player, well-respected and et cetera, as well as one of the other players. Father is a law enforcement officer, police officer in Detroit, Michigan, and they began to raise the question about due process, if you will. And so, of course, this journalist, I, concurred and began to use the platforms and media that I have to ask the question, where was the due process? Well, unbeknownst to some at that particular point, the affirmative action office, which has a very, very low standard, if you will, of proof, were conducting this four-month investigation, 80-page report, etc. And so what happened is we moved into the month of December. This report was released to television station KSTT, Channel 5, here in our beloved Shangri-La. And there immediately was a significant explosion, if you will, including demands by feminist groups, white feminist groups and others, that the county attorney reopen the case, which he immediately did, though it was quite clear that he did not have great enthusiasm, but he was under pressure. You know, he wasn't up for reelection. But he was feeling it. He was feeling that maybe there was something in this 80-page report. One of the things that the university did with the concurrence, and we now say this and declare this on this program tonight, with the concurrence and with the culpability and conspiracy of the president of the University of Minnesota, the athletic director, leadership of the affirmative action department and others, and the silence as an example of the African-American Studies Department and, more importantly, the University of Minnesota so-called prestigious law school, was to help and facilitate a report and allegations in the report that these 10 young men had, in fact, committed even more egregious acts and violations of the procedures and the value of the University of Minnesota. And so, with some surprise to some, the university announced that the 10 individuals were suspended and would not be allowed to participate in a Holiday Bowl game, the Holiday Bowl, in fact, as it is called, that was held in San Diego, California. In fact, just a little over a week ago, this past week. Well, the players, almost actually to the man, 115 players on the University of Minnesota football team, black, white, rallied around their colleagues, even though some felt that the 80-page report did indicate that at least maybe three of their teammates had maybe violated some aspects and rules of the University of Minnesota and its so-called great values. But they stood as one and indicated that they would not participate in the bowl game in San Diego at that particular point in about 9 days. After 2 days of conversations and et cetera, they were confronted with something that was very interesting as we now begin to move towards the ultimate firing plays yesterday at approximately 2:30 or thereabouts. And that was that the president, think about this, the president of the university, President Keller, and the athletic director, who's only been here 6 months, if you will, coming from the University of Syracuse. By the way, a lot of people didn't know that this gentleman, Mr. Coy, was born and raised and went to school in Waterloo, Iowa, which is about 170 miles south of the Twin Cities. In fact, he played for Columbus Catholic High School there in Waterloo, if you will. And there's been some discussion that as a youngster and as a young man growing up, he showed some rather significant animus for African Americans. By the way, particularly back in those days, Waterloo had a pretty good sized African American population. Waterloo is a city of about 89,000 at its peak in the 1970s and early 80s, and at least over 14,000 of Waterloo citizens were African Americans there working at the big John Deere plant down there, where, if I'm not mistaken, the current athletic director's daddy worked and was possibly a supervisor and a man who had expressed animus, if you will, towards African Americans, which his son also displayed, the man who is now currently the athletic director at the University of Minnesota. It's an interesting narrative. And so we then found ourselves with a situation in which the president of the university and the athletic director, Mr. Coy, told the players in a so-called closed meeting that Coach Tracy Clays had recommended that the 10 African Americans ball players should all be expelled and removed from the team. Of course, a number of players, including the captains of the team and other more veteran senior and junior players, immediately confronted Tracy Clays, who was shocked that misrepresentation, outright lie, had been told and was being driven by the head of the university, by the athletic director. And now there is some indication, based on news accounts that are emerging today here in the Twin Cities, as the major white papers are reporting that Tracy Clays has been fired, that the regents, the chairman and vice chairman of the regents, the board of regents, were all in on this. And we are getting ready to get into just how foul this situation was. The chairman of the board of regents, in fact, is a man of the cloth. His name is Dean Johnson. He is the senior pastor at a very large white church in a community called Wilmer, Minnesota, which is about, 80 miles west of the Twin Cities, if you will. Minneapolis, St. Paul had been through there a number of times, if you will. At one time, actually had a black dentist who was a former All-Pro in the National Football League back in the day, the late Dr. John Williams, who also had lettered and made All-American at the University of Minnesota, and then when he retired from the then Los Angeles Rams, before they became the St. Louis Rams, now they're back in Los Angeles. But John Williams had a practice for a short period of time in Wilmer, and somewhere or another, I married a young lady from Wilmer, a Caucasian, but what began to happen is that there began to be a movement, and some maintain that some of the ministers may have been a part of it, that they really didn't want this tar baby this black man, John Williams, the late deceased John Williams, to be doing business in their town. That Wilmer did not necessarily take kindly to Negroes and Indians, if you will, and that had been my own recollection as a person who has lived here in Minnesota since 1945. And so now it is beginning to emerge the following, if you will. First of all, we reported late Monday night on our website that Tracy Claes was to be fired yesterday, and that the determination had been made long ago, if you will. Let me give you an example now and walk you back through the history. In early November, mid-November, as the Gophers began to wind down the season and it looked like they had already won enough games to be bowl eligible, and it looked like they were getting ready to win at least 8 games, it was indicated that Mark Coyle, the general manager, the athletic director, these are amateur athletes, only the coaches make money, that he had kind of indicated that he didn't quite know when Coach Tracy Claes would receive an extension, which is normal when your coach has a good season and et cetera. Coach Claes had been brought here to Minnesota by Coach Jerry Kill, who turned this program around in spite of the actions of former athletic director Norwood Teague, one of the greatest sexual perverts and et cetera that the university has known in quite some time, and they've known some sexual perverts over there. Norwood Teague a couple years ago was let out. He received a nice package. So for sexual misconduct, you know, white man. Now, Norwood Teague's white man, so that we understand that in a clear lit. Norwood Teague, who some say now sits and hangs out at J.D. Hoyt. This came from Mark Rosen, the white commentator, sports commentator, and lead commentator for WCCO early this morning when he said Norwood Teague spends his time down at J.D. Hoyt texting sex messages to women who work at the University of Minnesota. I mean, I'm just now repeating what white folks are saying. I mean, you know, we can do this on blog radio. You know, it's not anything we're making up because the cat is out of the bag. Let me tell you what the cat was. When current athletic director came here from the University of Syracuse, after Norwood Teague had been unceremoniously pushed out as far as they could get him out of here, if you will. Norwood Teague is the same individual who stabbed the legendary and now head coach at Memphis and has spent the last 2 years putting back together the basketball program at Texas Tech, the beloved Tubby Smith. No one likes to talk about that in this town anymore, though I can suggest to you that if you go to my newspaper column in the Spokesman Recorder, you will see a couple of articles in which I indicated that Tubby Smith had clearly been wronged. He had been lied on. There was a relationship between Norwood Teague and a white female reporter for the Minneapolis Star Tribune, the so-called largest white newspaper here in the state of Minnesota, if you will. That in itself was whitewashed. Ooh, I hate to keep using that term, but that was whitewashed by the Star Tribune and others. In fact, the young lady that was Norwood Teague's companion, if you know what I mean, no longer writes for the Star Tribune. We have not seen her byline in quite some point in time. But what happened was boosters who had become very anti-Tracy Claes. Tracy Claes is a big man. He's big, probably about 350 pounds, 330 pounds. And I was shocked in the last week as intel was provided to me as a journalist here in Minnesota with sources in many different places about the kind of ugly statements and reflections. Now, understand, you know, Tracy Claes is white. from Kansas, if you will, down around my part of the country. Tracy Clays is just a good person. He's a good man, and certainly he earned the respect, the love, and the trust of his players when, in fact, the president of the University of Minnesota, the current athletic director, and apparently, Dean Johnson, you, a man of the cloth, a pastor, a minister, in what appears to be the largest church in a town called Wilmer, Minnesota, you were all in on this. As people began to slander the reputation and the image of Clays, and they used such things as the fact that he was fat, and that in that he was fat, and et cetera, that he could not get out and do fundraising and things, and that he didn't look like the kind of person that we would want to, quote-unquote, endorse as representing and recruiting on behalf of the University of Minnesota. Now, I thought that, you know, Tracy Clays and Terry Keel, who, as we said just yesterday, became the offensive coordinator at Rutgers, had done a good job. And I think that is on display. Two consecutive seasons at 8-4, and then this year, first time since 2003, the University of Minnesota won more than 8 games. They were 9-4, if you will. This is all important. Asking alumni and et cetera to line up, you know, and make donations and et cetera, particularly to take care of those programs within your sports complex that don't make any money. In other words, they don't draw or create the kind of revenue that keeps a big athletic department going. And in fact, the University of Minnesota has been doing a lot of new building. Oh, by the way, one of the things that we do up here, and we really saw it with TCF Stadium, and it's one of the reasons that I think that the Affirmative Action Office of the University of Minnesota, which did not hesitate to railroad and to deny due process to African-American athletes, were totally silent when this edifice stadium, TCF Stadium, Twin City Federal is the actual name, one of our big savings and loan corporations, when there was no requirement, and as an outgrowth of no requirement, there wasn't a single African-American firm other than a wing business, a business that received a concession stand to prepare them for opening their concession stand in the People's Stadium under the auspices and control of Louis King, probably the most powerful African-American here in the state of Minnesota. Mr. King has been averaging about $250,000 per game as it pertains to his concession stand in the People's Stadium. Well, for two seasons while the Gophers played at TCF Stadium, Mr. King, in an arrangement that has a lot of money passing under the table, we up here will probably begin to get to that when the Republicans begin a series of hearings in the next 2 weeks in the Minnesota Senate to take a look at some real serious improprieties and possible criminal activities as it pertains to those that were entrusted with the management of the $1.1 billion, actually it's $1.6 billion People's Stadium, if you will. Oh, that's another piece that we are breaking that story tonight on this program, is that when you talk about the amount of money that is already being stolen and disappearing out of the stadium and the taxpayers of the state of Minnesota, and actually the Vikings, who really should be concerned, are being taken to the cleaners in regards to the kind of fixes that are going on, and the falsification, if you will, of documentation relevant to how many African-Americans, number one, worked on the building of the stadium over a three-year period, and how many African-American firms have been the recipients of contracts and et cetera. The amount of criminal action and activity that has taken place may be uncovered by Senator Rosen, she who will head the committee that will begin the public testimony and requiring individuals to swear under oath relevant to carrying out the requirements of the law. In fact, we have at least one state senator who, by the way, has announced privately to his friends that he will be supporting a white candidate for mayor of the city of Minneapolis, if you will, which is going to create a significant rift amongst the African-American leadership in the Twin Cities, because the mayor, and now this always ties in with this whole situation with the University of Minnesota and what has been happening. It just tonight is a part of a reflection on just how much criminality and corruption goes on in this city and the in surrounding areas, if you will. Yes, one of our African-American senators has thrown his support to the gentleman from Virginia, if you will, who has announced last night that he will be running to challenge the incumbent mayor, a Caucasian woman, married to an African-American leader, if you will, who is a part of a group calling itself the African-American Leadership Forum, if you will. Oh, it's going to be ugly. See, we were told, it was kind of hinted that we shouldn't talk about this, we should reveal this tonight on this program. And I said, well, why not? I mean, the public has a right to know. You have Nikema Levy-Pounds, who, by the way, congratulations, Nikema. You just become engaged to a young man that both of you attend church at Zion Baptist Church in North Minneapolis, which is now part of the United Methodist Church of America. A lot of black folk didn't know that either. One of the three oldest black churches in the state of Minnesota merged with the United White Methodist Church about a month and a half ago. That's another bombshell, by the way, that's getting ready to blow up. So we have all of this turmoil, if you will, these violent shakes that are going on like an earthquake and a tsunami and et cetera. And I'm just not sure how it's going to work. Now, back to the University of Minnesota. One of the things that happened that nobody was allegedly paying any attention to is that a couple of months ago, this University of Minnesota athletic director, who had just come here from the University of Syracuse, had already made up his mind that he wanted to find a reason to cancel the contract of Tracy Clays and find reason to fire him. His buyout was $500,000, if you will. The total amount, by the way, that the university will have to pay, as they have fired all the coaches except two. And one of those was one of the most popular African-American coaches who, in fact, his brother plays for the Minnesota Vikings. They come out of Rochester, Minnesota. Everyone has great respect and love for them. I found it interesting that Coy did not fire him, that brother, and a Caucasian assistant coach, if you will. But now what's coming out is that the university has been talking to a number of you African-American leaders to get you to welcome whoever the next coach is. Now, the next coach initially, and who had been involved in secret, oh, yes, 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 because Western Michigan is really kicked off right now about the fact that their quote-unquote coach, who finished the season 13-1, lost just the other night to Wisconsin, eighth-ranked Wisconsin, defeated by a touchdown, 15th-ranked Western Michigan. Now, of course, the character who is the coach of Western Michigan, if you will, was initially going to be the person that was going to succeed Tracy Clays, who had been told after the Northwestern game here at the University of Minnesota that he and his entire coaching staff would be brought back, but that was a ploy. And who was in on that ploy was the chairman of the Board of Regents, Dean Johnson, the vice chair, who was brought into a meeting yesterday morning to give support to the athletic director as he had to go about the business of telling Tracy Blaze that he was through, if you will, that he had not done the kinds of things that were part of the expectation of the University of Minnesota, which is allegedly so rich in values and et cetera. Now what has happened in a couple of newspapers in the state of Michigan in the last 16 hours or so, the University of Western Michigan and Kalamazoo have been made aware that illegal discussions, tampering, had been going on with their coach, who is now, what is it, in his third year at Western Michigan. And that this raises serious questions now with the NCAA, who also has kind of a policy about tampering, if you will. Now, the president, let me tell you about the president of the University of Minnesota and what happened in San Diego. For those of you that are computer prone and proficient and et cetera, you can find them. We were watching the game and we wondered, because it's very unusual, really. I know they could try to make up stories that it happens, but it doesn't. When we saw both the chairman of the Board of Regents, the president of the university, and the athletic director all on the field, and what they were there for, I mean, this is going to blow some of your minds. What they were there for was to make sure that the black athletes did not in any way frighten or attempt to say anything to any of the white cheerleaders, including the cheerleader who had filed the complaint and maintained that there had been sexual misconduct and that it had been non-consensual, if you will. And so after the game, there was some kind of activity, particularly by boosters who not only are big supporters of the University of Minnesota, you know, donate a lot of money, but also were Tracy Clay fans, and thought that certainly, particularly in light of the fact that the county attorney announced that he would not prosecute, that there was, as he had said the first time around, there was no prima facie to go in that direction, even as it pertains to the rights of an African American. And so it looked like things were pretty good. Tracy was looking at a renewal of going out and recruitment and et cetera. But then he began to hear some conversation on the flight back from San Diego. He first stopped in Kansas to visit with family there. And that was that he was going to be fired, because what happened is the athletic director at the University of Minnesota had said, yes, Tracy said, let's meet next week, get ourselves time to get back into Minnesota and et cetera, and then we will meet on Tuesday. Well, the reason for that was, in order to pump up the head coach at Western Michigan, if you will, even though they knew that they didn't stand a chance of defeating University of Wisconsin in the Cotton Bowl game, but the fact of the matter is it would be easier for many of the white sportscasters and et cetera and others to come forward and indicate their concerns, if you will, about Tracy Clay's and welcome, quote-unquote, a new coach. In fact, it is going to be found out at some point that the petition that everyone is talking about here, the petition with allegedly 3,700 names saying that Tracy Clay should be fired, if you will, that was put together by the athletic director and the president of the university. They conspired. Again, we use the term conspired. They conspired to put that into place. They conspired with their own Office of Affirmative Action and et cetera, of course, which is going to do whatever they're told to do by the president of the institution, to begin to organize the protest. and to organize the petition, if you will. Tracy Clays, on New Year's Day, realized, and some of that will be discussed in about 45 minutes on WCCO here in Minneapolis, he became aware of the level of the conspiracy, and he became aware that in 2 days he would be fired. The rationale was the following, and now in the last 15 minutes of tonight's program, let us get in to just how foul and how racist this situation is. In making the announcement yesterday afternoon, the athletic director of the University of Minnesota, who's been here 6 months, laid out a narrative and points that he maintained, bullet points, I guess you could call them, of how he had lost confidence in Coach Clay. And though he had told him after the Northwestern game that Coach Clay would be brought back to continue to coach at the University of Minnesota, that he had all kinds of concerns and problems, and it had to do with the intellectual achievements, test score, all those kinds of things of athletes, but basically in the private conversations, including the cocktail party after the game in San Diego, and they began to talk about, and I have to say this, my friends, over the air, across the country, across the world, they started talking about the Negro problem. In some cases, they didn't even use the word Negro. They used the N-I-G, and they also used the code word tar, black tar. Yes, they did. But now, that night, as the supporters of the University of Minnesota football team under Tracy Clays were celebrating and feeling good, and et cetera, arguments began to take place because some of the anti-Tracy Clay people began to let their animus show and began to talk in terms of him as a fat slob and et cetera, which then led, I mean, think about it. These are allegedly grown, intelligent white folks, if you will, who began to talk in terms that this fat slob had no business. He was not attractive, if you will. You know, we couldn't use him. They couldn't use him. As it pertains to raising funds and et cetera, people didn't feel comfortable with this 300-pound clown coming up in their office and et cetera. And so after the game in San Diego last week, some of Tracy's supporters said they were sick and tired of hearing this, and because of the discipline and et cetera showed by the team, they maintained that it was a clear indication that the coach enjoyed the support and the respect and the admiration of the team, because some of the players initially thought when they were lied to by the president of the University of Minnesota and by the athletic director that it had been Tracy Clay who had recommended to the athletic director that these 10 young African-American student-athletes be suspended. Clay's had to challenge that, and in fact there were two separate stories 2 days apart in the Minneapolis Star Tribune, the Johannesburg Times as we call it, in which the narrative changed within less than 24 hours. The narrative being that Coach Clays had recognized the fact that his black ball players had committed a criminal act, had violated the rules, the principles, the values of the University of Minnesota. They had raped a white girl and possibly assaulted a couple of other white girls who had all been a part of the group that had gone out drinking and et cetera and blah, blah, blah. And consequently, this would cause a very dark cloud over the University of Minnesota. Lo and behold, the next day in the Johannesburg Times / Minneapolis Star Tribune, it switched. The narrative was that they had misspoken. The athletic director had recommended to the president of the institution that, these players be suspended, if you will. Now, that narrative even played out yesterday in the early morning hours, 9, 10, 11 o'clock, five-hour meeting. In fact, they initially had a five-hour meeting, according to the white media here in the Twin Cities, both the Minneapolis Star Tribune, the St. Paul Pioneer Press, now saying there was a five-hour meeting, which included the chairman of the Board of Regents, the vice chair of the Board of Regents, one other person, the general counsel, the president, and of course, the athletic director, and maybe even a couple of others who now all of a sudden don't want to be identified. They met for 5 hours to discuss what allegations and what expression of concerns that they would make directly to Tracy Claise. Now, one of the things that they had discussed initially was asking for his resignation, but apparently Tracy Claise, and he may talk about that tonight on WCCO here in the city of Minneapolis and St. Paul, they wanted him to resign. He said, for what? What reason? Why? Why would I do that? Because at some point they had even attempted to tamper with some of the players, particularly some of the white players, to have them indicate that they thought that Tracy Claise had lost the confidence of the club, of the team, with the exception of the black ball players. A number of white ball players on this team, particularly seniors, juniors, were deeply offended, and that is the genesis of some of the comments in both of the major white newspapers here in the Twin Cities and the state of Minnesota this morning. They were offended. By the way, one of the other things that was encouraged by the athletic director and the president, and we touched on it moments ago, was that the African-American players, the 10 players, had attempted to sabotage the investigation by obstructing the investigation. That is supposed to be an additional amendment to the so-called complaint. But here's where we're at this hour as we begin to wind down over the last 9 minutes. First of all, every African-American ball player on the University of Minnesota football team should petition the NCAA to allow them to transfer without penalty. In other words, that they would not lose any eligibility and would begin and be allowed to play at the beginning of the 2017 season. I, in 1985, was a part of what was a major investigation of the University of Minnesota, which almost led. Only by one vote did they survive. University of Minnesota was being confronted with the death penalty under the NCAA rules as an outgrowth of their outrageous actions predicated upon racism and disdain for African Americans. You know, one of the things that was said in the course of the meeting involving the group that met for 5 hours prior to terminating Tracy Claise was that these Negroes, these blacks, are really nothing more than property. They are not seen. Our young men are not seen as human beings. They are not seen as representing that which is the finest about human beings. Certainly, a couple of them made some mistakes and et cetera. Of course, there's enough blame to go around when one takes a look at the actual intelligence reports. Oh, yes, I wasn't supposed to mention that. The intelligence reports of surveys and surveillance cameras of the activities in the bar and et cetera before they went to the apartment of one of the young African-American players, University of Minnesota players, prior to the events. The 80-page report that many in the fourth estate in this city were touting and et cetera is bogus, if you will. Information has been, and facts have been twisted, if you will. Lies have been told and et cetera. That is the reason that two of the most significant fighters for these young men, one is the father of player Antonio Winfield Jr., his father, Antonio Winfield Sr., who has indicated that it's no way in the world that his son will return to the University of Minnesota. The other is one of the great legends of modern Minnesota football, Tyrone Carter, who stepped forward and called out the president and others. And I hope that they are at some point or another put in contact with this program tonight, though some of this is also in our columns and et cetera, so that one understands the level of conspiracy and collusion and the violation of the rights of these young men. Now, there will have to be, and I would encourage those of you in the Twin Cities who are about the business of fairness and et cetera to follow closely and to make inquiry. You have a right to make inquiry, particularly of some of the regions, because the regions allegedly represent all of the citizens and taxpayers of the state of Minnesota, if you will, that you need to ask the question about the hearing. See, there are 10 appeals, and there have to be 10 hearings, 10 separate hearings. And they have already discussed suppressing any information with regards to the hearings and closing the hearings to the general public. That is the reason that I am led to believe that Mr. Hutt, the attorney for all 10 of these young African-Americans who have been denied due process under color of law, is making the right effort by taking this matter into the federal court, suing the president of the University of Minnesota, suing the athletic director. He also needs to sue the chair of the Board of Regents, if you will, even though he is an alleged man of the cloth, you know, walking in the sandals of Satan. Because I'm telling you, that's just how ugly this is. As we move into the last 3.5 minute program, a program which can always be heard by on demand and et cetera, I would appeal to those who still have the courage and the fight in them that was so well known and appreciated and valued in the 1960s and 70s, if you will, that you need to begin to raise questions. You begin to need to ask for some specific details. You must begin to ask for a full examination of an 80-page report, which is as crooked, quote unquote, as Donald Trump's belief that the Russians didn't hack into American institutions, corporations, and political entities, and et cetera. Tracy Clay is gone, but I hope he is meeting with his attorneys, and I hope that he is giving consideration to taking a significant action. The Western Michigan situation is very interesting because last night, Mark Rosen, the lead sportscaster for WCCO, all of a sudden turned on the coach of Western Michigan and said, actually he said in a posting that he's like a guy by the name of Jim Wacker or Wicker. In other words, that the Western Michigan coach is a clown, if you will. And I wondered why there was that turning until I found out that one of the people that the athletic director is pushing is a young man that he hired when he was the athletic director at Boise State in Boise, Idaho, before he went to the University of Syracuse. A young man that that he is now switching up and trying to bring here to the University of Minnesota. But let me say this. I find it interesting that of all the potential coaches that are being talked about, they're all white. And this points up something else that we've talked about on this program for a number of years. The number of African-Americans in coaching positions in both college and professional sports continues to shrink. And it is interesting, the number of African-Americans that play, make money for these great white state institutions and et cetera, that we are continuing to see the number of African-American coaches in both Division I and Division II and anything else continue to be almost non-existent, if you will. University of Minnesota, and in some of the discussions that they had in that five-hour meeting before Tracy Clays was called in, one of the things that they said, and Reverend Johnson, you were right in the middle of that discussion, and that was that one of the last things we want to do is to have a Negro coach come here to coach anything, basketball, football, if you will. University of Minnesota is a very racist institute. It should not be allowed to enjoy the fruits of the talents of young African-Americans, male or female, because they think just about the same of young African-American females on the basketball team and a couple on the volleyball team. Anyways, this is Minnesota, my friend. Not only is it dark and cold and ugly here, if you will, but it is vicious. And in the name of Jesus Christ, because they said a prayer at the conclusion of the meeting yesterday before they brought Coach Clay in to take his livelihood away from him. Well, we appreciate the opportunity to talk with you, certainly on demand and et cetera, that can be heard, and we look forward to any questions that anyone may have with regards to what really happened in an apartment in Dinkytown on the campus of the University of Minnesota. Appreciate the opportunity to be with you, and we'll be returning next week, and hopefully we will have even more additional information about the conspiracy. And that conspiracy was driven by the fact that it was said in that meeting, Tracy Clay, that you were, quote-unquote, too key on allowing Negroes an opportunity to get an education and to participate in athletics at the University of Minnesota. A dark day, very dark day. Well, on behalf of my colleague, we wish you the very best. I'm Ron Edwards. This is Don and Ron Broker.